Hello again, and welcome to another episode of BitNote with David Collins. We've got some good video game music and talk games lined up for you tonight, so hope you enjoy. Okay, I think I know which tune to start this show off on. Have a listen. So, what you just heard there was World of Goo Beginning, and it is from the video game World of Goo, developed by 2D Boy, and music by Kyle Gabler. World of Goo has kind of got an interesting history, especially with the guys behind it. It all started out when Kyle Gabler was in grad school, and he and a bunch of other students start up the Experimental Gameplay Project, which is still going to this day in some form, with the ideas where they make a lot of games in a very short space of time. And so therefore, they just had to pick a theme, go with it, make a quick game, move on. One of those games that Kyle Gabler developed was essentially a game where you had all these little bits of goo sort of thing, but they connected with each other. And the idea was you stretched one into, you put a few on the ground which connected, and then you put one above it. So it sort of built a tower, so to speak. So you'd click and drag two of the goo things on the ground until they're beside each other and connected. Then you take like a third one at the top, and it connects the other two in the form of a triangle. So you try to take another goo ball and put it to the side, and it makes another sort of extension to the right side of the triangle, but then it becomes unbalanced. So you take another thing and put it like under the other two, and just suddenly you've basically got the base of a pyramid. So there's a lot of different ways it can use it like this. It's basically a very impromptu sort of like bridge building construction thing, only it's got very bright little graphics, and you know, you've got a little world and all these little goo balls going everything else, and they've all got little eyes on them and cute sounds and everything. And essentially the original idea was to make a tower as high as you could with the goo ball, make a really high tower, but later Kyle Gabler and another worked in EA Games, and he worked with another guy called Ron Carmel. And in the end, they both left and set up 2D Boy to like make this tower game into a full World of Goo video game. So essentially, that's what they did. They left EA Games and formed it. 2D Boy was like the archetypical like indie game company. They did a lot of their development work in coffee houses, which they had free Wi-Fi on laptops and everything. They did it their own budget. They pushed out on their own thing, and unlike a lot of indie stories, let's face it, because a lot of times when you start up, it doesn't quite work, but they actually succeeded. World of Goo became hugely popular on Windows, Mac, and Linux, and not to mention the fact that it also ended up getting on the iPad, where it introduced to a whole new audience and did really well there too. So it became a good success. They worked hard, and as I've said already, Kyle Gabler did actually make the music there. He's obviously multi-talented. That intro thing was a bit of inspired by Liber Tango by Azur Piazzolla. And essentially, he's responsible. He composed a heck of a lot of the music for this game, pretty much all of it. And indeed, some of it actually came from other projects he composed music. For instance, I think one of the tracks he composed was originally composed for some short film involving Kid in a Fantasyland or something. I gotta look that up a little later. But World of Goo is a lot of fun. It basically deals with these little creatures called little creature goo thingies, and the idea is you've got to build a tower that'll take all the goo things from one side to the other, and if you have to get to what's basically this whole funnel where all the goo things can just go up the funnel and escape the level. Of course, exactly what the funnel leads to is kind of a mystery that's gradually revealed later on in the game. And the goo creatures can only move up and down the tower you created, so you've got to create some of the greatest array of crazy towers. I mean, at the start, it's just pretty simple. You just build upwards. But then you have to build sideways and across and down. And then they keep introducing these new goo creatures, like ones that you can take out from the tower and put somewhere else and everything. The whole game has this thing where the gameplay tends to vary slightly with each level. So one day it is more simple tower construction, then you're doing something really weird, like suddenly it's a great big pool of water and you got to build a tower using floating constructions in order to reach the top, even though you got to be careful because if it's too heavy it'll just sink down. And then another weird one where basically you're in kind of a funnel and you have to stretch your way up. And then there's this other real one, which unreal level called On the Cutwalk, which the level technically does involve still manipulating these little goo creatures, but it's also about trying to make a diva make her entrance on the red carpet, which kind of gets a little crazy. Some people have even looked into metaphorical things in it, into that thing. And that's because the plot of the game is kind of surreal about this planet of goo creatures. There's themes of consumerism, there's themes of technology, there's always this dark sort of like almost comic book sort of art style to most of the game, which kind of takes you a bit by surprise in some of the cutscenes. I believe they've taken this dark humor to even greater extent in their most recent game, which is called Little Inferno, which involves burning stuff. In World of Goo, it kind of took you by surprise the first time, and it's kind of got a nice theme to it. I'll play one more track from this game. This is another iconic music from the game, and it's called Ode to the Bridge Builder. Obviously, yes, it's not just towers, sometimes they're bridges, and you got to be careful, because some of those bridges you construct in the game are literally supported by balloons. Clearly, they are violating all forms of safety codes in order to create these things. So, my friends, that was Ode to the Bridge Builder, and it was, of course, by Carl Gabler from World of Goo by 2D Boy. Okay, on to our next game. Normally, I like to play fully through a video game and get a nice, deep knowledge of what this game is about and what's the feeling of it's about before I talk about it on this game show, but instead, I think I'll just play some music from a game I saw in an arcade once. That okay with you guys? And what you just heard there was this stage one theme from Snow Bros by Toplan. And yes, I think it was in a go-kart arena once. I saw this arcade game and I saw it was Snow Brothers and it looked good, but I'm not sure I even got... I think I got to play it once and that was about it. So my normal amount of depth and analysis into this game isn't exactly that good. It was kind of one of those classic arcade games, a bit inspired by Bubble Bobble in that you basically had each level and a bunch of enemies, and once you defeat them, you got to the next level. Only... the Snow Bros themselves were snowmen, and they attacked by shooting snow. And the idea was that you shot enough of this snow at your enemy so that they covered into a gigantic snowball, and then you pushed them and used the snowball attack to attack other enemies. So, you know, a lot of fun, a little like Bubble Bobble. I think the thing is that even in arcade games at the time, a lot of platformers, they realized that a lot of them were very repetitive in that they involved either, you know, jumping on enemies or shooting enemies. So a lot of them came up with interesting ways of defeating your enemies, so which in this game, of course, involves just covering them in snow. Like I said, maybe you've been inspired by Bubble Bubble, in which case you encase your enemies in bubbles and then pop them and stuff. I'm a little disappointed I couldn't actually find the credits for that game. I looked online for YouTube and found a complete long play of the game, but even if you complete the game, you don't actually get exposed to the credits, which was always something I was uncomfortable with. I heard that this happened in a lot of early games. Sometimes companies, a lot of programmers in the game company were seen more like workers or factory workers, so they weren't actually given credits in the game. Their name didn't actually appear in it. In fact, one of the earliest examples of an Easter egg, the game Advent, which was short for adventure, because, you know, there was probably because, you know, back then they were limited with so much memory, they probably couldn't even spell the name out fully. I'm not sure that's true, so don't get me wrong on that if I'm not. But even in Advent, there was a little Easter egg, which would basically, if you went into the right room the right way, you'd actually see the credits for the game. And they actually had to be hidden in that room by the actual developers of the game, who still wanted their name to be in the game, but they couldn't have it in an open way or else their boss would have seen and told them to take it out. So kind of crazy what they would have had to put up with back then. But yes, Snow Bros, for its time, pretty classic and bright, colourful, fun arcadey game, which I didn't really play as much as I wanted to because, I don't know, I don't think I just had the money on me at the time and I barely saw it anywhere else. Oh well. I think we're going to move on to our next game for the show, and this has got a pretty intensive soundtrack to it. I played music from from the game that came before this one before, so have a listen. We'll be right back. That is some great music there from a pretty great game series. That is the theme, Metal Gear Solid theme, from the game Metal Gear Solid 2 Sons of Liberty by Konami. The actual Metal Gear Solid theme was originally by Tappy, but in this game it was arranged by Harry Gregson-Williams. Harry Gregson-Williams actually has a very well-known Hollywood composer. He's made music from movies such as Deja Vu, Shrek, and Veronica Guerin. So basically, if you know anything about the Metal Gear Solid series at all, you know that it's very, very cinematic. So bringing in Hollywood-style composers into it just completely fits the bill entirely. I believe that's what they did with the first game as well. So, what can be said about Metal Gear Solid 2? Well, the first game, Metal Gear Solid, even though there were technically a few games that came before it, it was really the one that really kicked things off in a big, big way. It was in the late 90s, it was one of the games that introduced stealth, the idea that you had to actually be quiet, you had to take cover from enemies, you had to be, you know, you had to hide in places, and if you were seen, you had to run away and hide. Essentially, it was the game that really introduced stealth to games, but it also upped the stakes when it came to a whole cinematic level. There was a whole really powerful story about basically a crazy group of villains who had taken control of this island that housed nuclear weapons. You yourself were Solid Snake, someone who felt he was a little too old for this stuff, but was drafted in against his will to put a stop to this threat and what the terrorists were planning. Each terrorist actually had very individual characteristics. That was one of the great things about the first game. There was this great big, you know, Native American bulky guy who carried around a minigame. There was this sniper wolf who was this brilliant sniper. She was also a friend of the wolves as well, so she was earning her name. And I could go on. The first game just had a great set of characters, a great, you know, solid concept about trying to take down these enemies, and it just flowed together really well. Sometimes the cutscenes could be pretty long, but with a lot of characters, but people were pretty hyped of it in total, and just there was a lot of good stuff about it. Of course, we all know what happens when a great game launches out of seemingly nowhere. The sequel comes along, and expectations were high. Metal Gear Solid 2 was said to completely break the bounds of everything that had been done graphically beforehand. Whereas Metal Gear Solid 1 had been developed for the PlayStation, which was a cool but one of the earliest generations of consoles to deal with 3D graphics, Metal Gear Solid 2 would be on the PlayStation 2, which at the time was hyped as having unrivaled graphic performances. So there were demos, there were demonstrations, there were things saying this would be vibrant, realistic, the most crazy brilliant Metal Gear game yet, and basically got everyone hyped up. And at the time, damn, it did look good. I mean, a lot of graphical effects, just how everything was pieced together, how you didn't have like fog that just stopped you from seeing a distance. And then, of course, there was also the cutscenes. But if I'm going to be honest, the plot of the game got a little crazy. There was, it kind of started out with you just being Solid Snake once again, and you were on a tanker, and you had to deal with this other gigantic, and you just tried to expose details of this military plot that wouldn't instabilize things, and that was good. But then the game shifts, and suddenly you're playing as this completely separate character called Raiden, who essentially isn't meant to be the hero, even though he does enough heroic stuff to actually win the battle in the end of the game. So, and meanwhile you bump into Solid Snake, but you're not sure who he is at first. There's a bit of things like that. The game also has relationship drama in it, which is a bit surreal, because right at the time when you're trying to save the free world, your girlfriend is asking, "Do you know what day it is? It's very important to me that you remember," and you're going, "Oh, for fudge's sake. You know, can you not take on the responsibility that I'm trying to save the world here?" The game series has a lot of surreal stuff like that. And, but it's also, and of course they try to redo the whole villains and try to make them all different and interesting, like having one character that has great of luck and the other character who's called Vamp. But he isn't called Vamp because he looks like a vampire and drinks blood and all this other stuff, but he's also called Vamp because apparently he's bisexual or something, which is something I never honestly got. Seriously, he's a vampire. That's the only thing I need to explain from it. The game reuses a lot of the mechanics and introduces lots of new movement and ways of aiming through the things and a lot of technical improvements. And in the end, it actually is a pretty good game. It sets up a lot of stuff, and while it didn't quite meet the expectations that were on it and a lot of people were annoyed by Raiden, I still think it's pretty damn playable. Just like the last game, it also has quite a heck of an ending theme. It is called Can't Say Goodbye to Yesterday, like the in the previous game, it was composed by Rika Meranke, and it was, in this case, it was performed by Carla White. So, just listen to this song and just remember how this plays out in the game itself. You're in a wasteland after a gigantic robot that has been felled, and this is how you're meant to apparently look at your life and the passage that you've taken through it. This has been David Collins with BitNote. Next episode will be our last episode for the summer break, so make sure you catch it. And thank you for listening.
I stare at the stars and the sky up above and think, what am I made of? Am I full of sorrow? Am I hurt and pain? Or am I filled with love? I walk by myself on the streets below and ask every child I know, do you think tomorrow will bring sun or rain? Which one? peace, not war, and dreams.